At dusk, through her tears, she saw the swift and luminous disks that crossed the sky like an exhalation, and she thought that it was a signal of death. She was still under the chestnut tree, sobbing at her husband's knees, when they brought in Colonel Aureliano Buendía, wrapped in a blanket that was stiff with dry blood, and with his eyes open in rage. He was out of danger. The bullet had followed such a neat path that the doctor was able to put a cord soaked in iodine in through the chest and withdraw it from the back. "That was my masterpiece," he said with satisfaction. "It was the only point where a bullet could pass through without harming any vital organ." Colonel Aureliano Buendía saw himself surrounded by charitable novices who intoned desperate psalms for the repose of his soul, and then he was sorry that he had not shot himself in the roof of the mouth, as he had considered doing, if only to mock the prediction of Pilar Ternera. "If I still had the authority," he told the doctor, "I'd have you shot out of hand. Not for having saved my life, but for having made a fool of me." The failure of his death brought back his lost prestige in a few hours. The same people who invented the story that he had sold the war for a room with walls made of gold bricks defined the attempted suicide as an act of honor and proclaimed him a martyr. Then, when he rejected the Order of Merit awarded him by the President of the Republic, even his most bitter enemies filed through the room asking him to withdraw recognition of the armistice and to start a new war. The house was filled with gifts meant as amends. Impressed finally by the massive support of his former comrades in arms, Colonel Aureliano Buendía did not put aside the possibility of pleasing them. On the contrary, at a certain moment he seemed so enthusiastic with the idea of a new war that Colonel Gerineldo Márquez thought that he was only waiting for a pretext to proclaim it. The pretext was offered, in fact, when the President of the Republic refused to award any military pensions to former combatants, liberal or conservative, until each case was examined by a special commission and the award approved by the Congress. "That's an outrage," thundered Colonel Aureliano Buendía. "They'll die of old age waiting for the mail to come." For the first time, he left the rocker that Úrsula had bought for his convalescence, and, walking about the bedroom, he dictated a strong message to the President of the Republic. In that telegram, which was never made public, he denounced the first violation of the Treaty of Neerlandia and threatened to proclaim war to the death if the assignment of pensions was not resolved within 2 weeks. His attitude was so just that it allowed him to hope even for the support of former conservative combatants. But the only reply from the government was the reinforcement of the military guard that had been placed at the door of his house with the pretext of protecting him, and the prohibition of all types of visits. Similar methods were adopted all through the country with other leaders who bore watching. It was an operation that was so timely, drastic, and effective that 2 months after the armistice, when Colonel Aureliano Buendía had recovered, his most dedicated conspirators were dead or exiled or had been assimilated forever into public administration. Colonel Aureliano Buendía left his room in December, and it was sufficient for him to look at the porch in order not to think about war again. With a vitality that seemed impossible at her age, Úrsula had rejuvenated the house again. "Now they're going to see who I am," she said, when she saw that her son was going to live. "There won't be a better, more open house in all the world than this madhouse." She had it washed and painted, changed the furniture, restored the garden and planted new flowers, and opened doors and windows so that the dazzling light of summer would penetrate even into the bedrooms. She decreed an end to the numerous superimposed periods of mourning, and she herself exchanged her rigorous old gowns for youthful clothing. The music of the pianola again made the house merry. When she heard it, Amaranta thought of Pietro Crespi, his evening gardenia, and his smell of lavender, and in the depths of her withered heart a clean rancor flourished, purified by time. One afternoon, when she was trying to put the parlor in order, Ursula asked for the help of the soldiers who were guarding the house. The young commander of the guard gave them permission. Little by little, Ursula began assigning them new chores. She invited them to eat, gave them clothing and shoes, and taught them how to read and write. When the government withdrew the guard, one of them continued living in the house and was in her service for many years. On New Year's Day, driven mad by rebuffs from Remedios the Beauty, the young commander of the guard was found dead under her window.